Fuck it. Hey, what's going on, everyone? It's Colt Cruz, and this is the KC at the Movies podcast. For those of you who have been listening for a while, welcome back. It's good to be back. It's good to talk to you guys again. And for those of you who are, you know, this is the first time coming in, welcome in. Thanks for listening. On this podcast, I just sit here in a dark room, and I talk about movies. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about movies today. So I hope you're ready for that. So everyone who's been listening, this year especially, the last podcast that we did was the Mission Impossible one, where I talked about all of the Mission Impossible films leading up to Dead Reckoning. We did The Road to Reckoning. So that was really fun. Really enjoyed that. Had a great time with that one. And then, that was all back in July, I think. And I have seen a lot of good movies since July, not including Barbie and Oppenheimer. Those I spoke about in a July video that I didn't actually put out. And there's actually a few movies here that I did speak about in a July video that I just never put out because I just wasn't happy with how it came out. And in fact, the next one that you guys will be seeing is the October video with all the horror movies on it. And also, for those of you who watched the Taylor Swift video, the Errors video, thank you. It's got the most views right now on the channel. So, thanks for that. The power of Taylor Swift, right? Like, she can boost economies and save YouTube channels, it seems. but I had a lot of fun making that video and seeing that. That was a really fun movie. Not speaking of concert films, I've handpicked from the last couple of months that, have gone down. And yeah, a lot of stuff has just happened in the last few months. Like I've been at my lowest. Now I'm not my highest, but like I'm busy and I'm tired all the time. There's never really a sense of happiness. I don't know if we'll ever achieve it. I don't know if we'll ever achieve it. Not to start off on a morbid note, but, when are we going to be happy? I've never experienced being just really tired all the time. I think the last time I was like really tired was when I was making my short films at film school and not getting a lot of sleep. But then something big happened in October that has actually very much impeded my sleep and like has fucked it up a lot. Weirdly, before that, I was actually getting pretty good sleep, but still being tired just from all the shit I was doing, because I now got like 3 jobs, so I'm trying to balance all that, and balance social life, and balance, you know, home life as well, like doing chores and shit like that. Definitely fell behind with that. I didn't even want to show people my room at the moment, because at the moment, I just come and go. It's really just a place where I sleep. I might play some, Alan Wake 2 or Spider-Man 2 or anything like that, and then I'll have to leave for the next shift. So there's a lot going on. As Taylor had on her shirt during the Red era on the Errors film, there's a lot going on at the moment. But I've handpicked 10 films that I've seen over the last few months that I want to talk about, that I want to tell you guys about, that I want to recommend to you guys, because I think you guys will actually really like them. They're pretty different from each other. There's a couple of horror films here. There's some dramas, there's some comedies, and they're all interesting. They're all very good movies. So I'm going to start talking, and I'm going to start talking about movies now. I'm going to start this list off with one of my favorites of the year so far, one of my favorite horror movies of the year so far, and that would be Talk to Me. Directed by Danny and Michael Filippo, also written by Danny Michael Filippo, with a story idea from the guy that I think he produces Bluey, the Australian TV show. So that was some cool trivia to find out. But yeah, he came up with a story idea. I think Danny took that and then reworked it and then got onto Michael, because Michael was working as, apparently he was working as a PA on the Babadook, Jennifer Kent's horror film. But she's from New Zealand, but she made, the Babadook, and then she went on to make The Nightingale as well a few years later. Michael was a PA on that, and Danny They was trying to get Danny's set experience, and they talked to a lot of professionals on that. And during all that time, they're getting the script together, trying to make a movie, because these guys, they want to make a film. They started off on YouTube as Raka Raka. I wasn't really a watcher of them. I know a lot of people and a lot of mates that actually did watch them in high school and enjoyed their stuff. I just never got around to it. I have briefly seen it from just them watching it, but I never really got into their stuff. So I've dived in completely blind, not knowing who these guys are, hearing about this movie just blowing the fuck up at Sundance, and people calling it one of the best movies of the year. And at Sundance, it got bought by A24. So a lot more clout, a lot more focus, and a lot more, I guess, attention for me now, seeing as they were bought by A24. In fact, they were approached by bigger studios to actually make this thing, but they went with small studios to make this film, because this film was only made with $4 million. And it's currently, I think, one of the biggest earners for the A24 movies. I think it's one of the biggest earners. So that's just really, really impressive. And from a, you know, people from Australia, it's even more inspiring. This film was shot in Adelaide as well, in South Australia. And it's just really inspiring. But what about the movie itself? So the movie is a possession film that involves a girl named Mia, played by, you know, brilliantly by Sophia Wilde. I'm definitely going to keep my eye on her. I'm going to keep my eye on all these actors, really. Joe Bird, Hayley Tarakis. Just excellent performances all throughout this movie. So the acting is just on point. It's all on point. Anyway, so the story is about Mia. She goes to this party with her friend and her friend's brother, who's kind of like her, I guess, her foster family. She's recently lost her mother, and she's dealing with the grief from that. So they go with them to this party where this hand is. This is brought by Haley and I forget who the other character's name is, but her friend. I'm just going to say her friend for now. Mia takes possession. Mia, with this hand, all you got to do is you grab it, you say, "Talk to me." And then when you see the spirit, you say, "I let you in." And then you get 90 seconds to have this possession, and you let the possession play out, but you can't let it go more than 90 seconds, because otherwise, as Haley says in the film, they'll want to stay. And without spoiling anything, you can probably guess what happens. And I thought this movie was, it was an absolute smash. Like I said, the acting is fantastic. I really liked the concept. I thought the art design and the production design, how the film was shot as well. There's a really great montage in the middle of the film with some really, really cool camera work and really great editing. A great song over it as well. I think it's called El Monde, I think the song is, that Mia sings, but also acts as the score to the scene as well. And it's probably my one of my favorite scenes the entire year. And even before that scene, another one of my favorite scenes the entire year is the first possession scene with Mia. And talking about that, the sound design used with all of this, the demonic voices, but just on everyday things, like pillows sound like bricks. Knives feel like baseball bats to the head, even though they're just getting stabbed. And you still hear the stab sound, but there's just a lot of, it feels like there's more bass to the sound. And that is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with this like hyper-realistic portrayal of these really fucked events. And also with all the possession of scenes as well, I've got to praise the practical effects and the makeup. Everyone who put on that makeup and put all that heavy makeup, or hats off to them. Apparently they had a dude who was on there for about 10 seconds. They got the shot and they said, "All right, you're done." But this was all shot during COVID. So then he had to go to a COVID hotel and stay there for about 2 weeks, even though he was only spending about half an hour on set to get a 10 second shot. Because usually when you're, especially when you're just setting up a scene, you're going to be waiting there for a while. because setup is usually going to be between 15 to 30 minutes. It could be longer, depends on the setup, depends how complex the setup is. But when you're an actor, I remember when I was with my actors, and you're talking with your crew, and when you're in actors, you just see them like waiting there, and you know, like, you feel bad because, like, they're, you know, they've been waiting there for quite a while, but you're trying to get the shot, you know, just right, just perfect. And they're very patient. I worked with a lot of great actors when I was making my short films, but with them, they are actually there for the entire day. They're there for the entire shoot. Imagine having one person who's just an extra that shows up for like a, you know, a very small amount of time, and then your shot's done. You get put on all this makeup, your shot's done, and then you're done for the day. But then you're not even done because all this takes place during the pandemic. You're sent somewhere where you can't really interact with anyone else for another 2 weeks. So I hope the paycheck was good for that gentleman that that happened with. Anyway, back to the... That was just a little anecdote, but back to the film. I thought this was really nasty and really... A really nasty and really mean film. Like, it was a really scary... I like the scary that's, like, really sadistic and nasty. Not so far as like Speak No Evil from this year, which I thought was incredibly sadistic and nasty. And I think that was like not too far, but like that's when you're just like, all right, I need a break from that. Like I can definitely watch this film again. I'm going to buy the 4K as well. And look at the special features as well. Apparently there's an alternate ending that is on there that I'm pretty keen to see. But also, I'm happy with what we got. Now, speaking about the ending, I get the excitement around the ending, and I get why everyone likes it. It's really cool, the ending. But I think leading up to it, I just wish there more is... I don't know. I wish it was just more like more of a punch to it. Like, I was talking about my friend, and this is... I'm relaying back all of what... I'm trying to remember, like, when we came out of that screening. I think it was... We saw it on July 14th, around there, I think. And we came out of it, and we're just like... Because I heard that was the main praise about the ending. And she was like, yeah, I also feel there could have been more to that ending. Like, it was predictable, I guess. I mean, I've just seen too many movies, maybe. But I just didn't feel that when everyone was saying, like, oh, this is the best ending of the year, or this is one of the best endings ever. Like, I don't know. I kind of saw that happening. I think I've just seen too many movies. So, that's just my fault, I guess. that's just my fault. But I don't want to spoil the ending. It actually is a fun ending. It's like I said, it's pretty exciting, the ending. And they've got funding for another one. I think they're going to try to do a prequel as well with all the other stuff, because yeah, there's a lot more you could do, I think, with this world and with this concept. And you know, Where's the Other Hand, for example, Hayley brings it up, the character Hayley brings it up in the movie where she says, where is the other one? Like, we couldn't find the other one, just found this one. It's the hand of, like, a Satanist, she says. And Hayley has some great fucking lines in this movie. Zoe is the character. Hayley Tarakis is the actor, and she has some great lines. She was the standout for me, even though I think Sophia Wald was the best performer there. Hayley Tarakis was the standout, and I really hope they get more roles in the future. But yeah, big recommendation for Talk To Me. I think it is my favorite horror movie of the year. I still haven't seen When Evil Lurks. I've heard some big things about that one, and people saying that is actually the horror movie of the year. But I really, really, really enjoyed Talk To Me, and I can't wait to purchase it on Blu-ray and 4K and watch those special features and... you know, getting more into horror, hopefully create something more like this one day on a $4 million budget. That's really inspiring to create something like this. That's really cool. And another A24 fair for number two, I've got Showing Up, which is written, directed by Kelly Reichardt. And as you guys know, if you're listening to the podcast, if you've seen the videos on YouTube, you know that I'm a big Reichardt fan. I'm a big old Kelly Reichardt fan. And I love her films. I haven't seen all of them, but from what I have seen, I just think they're terrific, outstanding, just pieces of work that really resonate with me. Wendy and Lucy, especially. I love dogs, and that movie has a very, very, very special spot in my heart, that movie. And the character of Wendy as well is played so beautifully by Michelle Williams. And Michelle Williams, a frequent collaborator with Kelly Reichardt, And she is also in this movie as well, showing up. And this is about a woman that, because really with Kelly Reichardt's movies, there's not really a plot to them. There's just vibes. There's just things happening in the movie, but it's what the characters get up to that I find the most interesting, and how naturalistic everything is played and how Kelly directs everything in the film. It's just about this woman who is an artist. She's trying to make these sculptures, and what happens is a pigeon gets injured. I think her cat attacks a pigeon inside her house, and then she decides to look after the pigeon, but at the same time, it is impeding her process, her creative process, because she has this neighbor that also wants to look after the pigeon, but her neighbor, you could say, if you're looking at it from a glance, she is the more successful artist that everyone actually really likes and wants to see her art and, you know, is getting more traction with her art. Whereas Michelle Williams' character, she is very kind of, I wouldn't say indie or underground, but she's trying to get it up there. I think she's trying to get the art out there, but she cares really deeply about it. And I felt like this film, because it got some mixed reactions, but I really resonated with this film. I really loved it. I felt like this film was for creative people, and this is just my opinion, for their you know, their process and their routine, and how when you try to set a routine, when you try to set something up, you try to stick to it, and then something comes in that interrupts it. I call it life getting in the way, and that's what I've been saying when I'm, you know, releasing these, trying to release these YouTube videos and podcasts and everything, and trying to keep on top of everything, that life is getting in the way. I use it in my most recent caption, actually, on my Instagram post. And it really throws you off your game, and it doesn't allow you to focus and try to zero in on, you know, the thing you're trying to achieve, trying to finish. And I remember talking to my therapist actually about this, and this is a couple of years ago now. I was in the room, and we're talking about my creative process and everything, and how it's I wouldn't say it's like unique or different, but it's just like my own creative process. And I, you know, for example, you get with some people that want to share each other's work and stuff like that, and they want to, like, you know, work off each other and add input. And don't get me wrong, I think input and constructive criticism is good, but I like to just work alone. I'm a bit more isolated with my creative stuff, and I tend to get things done more that way when I'm just on my own. And when the pigeon, when it gets injured in this film, and then her work, it just gets all, you know, she can feel it. Like, even trying to do everyday things, you just can't do it because there's something just getting in the way, and there's something that is stopping you from finishing that thing that you're working on. And I don't know, I just really felt it because, yeah, I have this thing where if I'm in a routine and if there is something that comes up, even something small, it really just throws me off. It doesn't actually allow me to, like I said, zero in or focus on it, and kind of fucks it up. And in simpler terms, it just fucks it up. So, yeah, this movie really spoke to me. And Michelle Williams, again, she played that character really well. Again, realistic way. I also loved to see John Maggio, I think, what's his name? Because he was also in another film that I'm going to talk about in my October video. Yeah, John Magaro. It was also good to see John Magaro again as well. We saw him last, I saw him last in First Cow, Kelly Reichardt's previous film, which I actually really, really liked as well. And he's actually going to be in another film that I'm going to be talking about in my October video that is one of my favorite movies of the year. But I wanted to say it's the October video because I did watch that in October. But yeah, showing up, it's quiet, it's slow, it's delicate. And I think if you're in the mood for that, you can really enjoy this film. If not, if you're one of those people where you watch movies like this and you're just thinking nothing happens or nothing happened, then this movie is not for you. It's clearly not for you, and I wouldn't say you'd have a good time of it. But if you don't think when, if you just watch films when like nothing happens, but the vibes, I think someone put a playlist or a list, sorry, up on Letterboxd where it's literally that. It's like nothing happens, but yeah, the vibes. I would put Showing Up in that category, but there's something special and something more central that spoke to me in Showing Up about creativity and trying to be focused on your work, trying to be better as an artist. And yeah, I really saw that in the film. So Showing Up, another recommendation from me, and yeah, watch it, make it, form your own opinion if you want to. For number three, I've got They Cloned Tyrone. This was the film that came out the weekend that Barbie and Oppenheimer came out. But this one came out on Netflix, and it's written and directed by Jewel Taylor. It's got John Boyega, Jamie Foxx, Turner Paris. It's about this guy named Fontaine, who's played by John Boyega, and he's played in a very like low, gruff voice, like very different character to what he normally plays. I would akin it to... I would say it's more akin to his role in Red, White, and Blue from Stephen Queen's Small Axe trilogy, but a lot more of a gangster type. A lot more of a gangster type in this one. You know, he's a... I think he sells drugs, I think, as well, and he collects debts. You know, he plays that kind of character in this film, and... he gets shot by a rival gang, and when he gets shot, he realizes that he is reliving the same day over and over again. And when he meets up with Jamie Foxx's character, who is the best part of the movie in my opinion, and Tuana Paris, they realize that there's something funky going on in their hometown. And I don't want to ruin it because all the surprises of this movie really got me, and I really liked all the twists and turns we took with this one. I really enjoyed the funky vibe of the whole thing. The score was really, you know, funky, for lack of a better term or word. Yeah, really got into that vibe, that 70s kind of aesthetic. The lighting's really nice. I think it's all shot on film, or it looks like it's shot on film. It looks absolutely beautiful. And the performances here, not just John Boyega, but I mentioned Jamie Foxx. I mentioned Tuana Paris. This is the best I've seen Tyona. This is the best I've seen Tyona. I've only seen her, in the MCU. I think she was in WandaVision as Monica... I already forgot their names. I'm so over the MCU that I've just forgotten all the names of the characters now. but she was in that. I really enjoyed her in this. And Jamie Foxx, though. Jamie Foxx, man, is the standout in this movie. He plays a character that had me laughing every fucking line he had. I was laughing so hard at his like timing, his delivery. When Jamie Foxx gets a great role, man, does he commit, and man, does he like just have so much fun of it, and he can fucking show you that he is a great actor, and you know, just great to watch on screen. He's always great to watch, but the characters he gets to play, like, I really wish I saw more of this, him playing characters like this and getting more chances in roles like this. It's just so fun to see. If you like the film Sorry to Bother You from Boots Riley, I think you're going to enjoy this one, and I think you're going to enjoy the same kind of humor and, I guess, satire that it's going for as well in this movie. And it's really funny. It's really, really, really funny. Yeah, not much more to say, because I don't want to spoil it. I want you to watch this and you know, go through all the twists and turns that I did, because it goes places, man. It really goes places. But it's a really, really enjoyable watch. One of my favorites of the year. And it's just sad that Netflix put this out the same weekend that fucking the two biggest movies of the year came out. And it's really sad that they didn't put this in theaters. Like, yeah, I guess you'd be competing with Barbie and Oppenheimer. But just, you know, give it a chance. Because other people might not want to watch those films. They might want to watch something more underground like this. You know, have more... pizzazz, and because this is not just like an indie small budget film. There's a beating heart to this, you know. There's a beating heart to this. I mean, there's a passion in this project from Jewel Taylor, and yeah, it's just sad that this was really underseen from a lot of people. And I'm just going to give the shout out right now to watch They Cloned Tyrone. We're going to get real sad. We're going to get real sad for a second, because I finally capped off my Oslo trilogy and watched Oslo August 31st. Now, the Oslo trilogy, if you don't know, is films written, directed by Joachim Trier, or Joachim Trier, however you say his name. He did The Worst Person in the World from 2020. Or 2021, depends on what year, that movie played in festivals, and it got a theatrical release. We'll just say 2021, because it ended up on my 2022 list, I'm pretty sure. No, it ended up on my 2021 list. Anyway, Worst Person in the World, this guy did, and everyone loved that movie, and he said that it was part of this unofficial Oslo trilogy, because all these films take place in Oslo in Norway, and I hadn't seen the other two, and everyone was raving about Oslo August 31st, and the first movie in this trilogy as well, Reprise, which I also watched in July, which was supposed to be on that July video, but I never, again, like I said, I never released it, but I also watched Reprise and really liked that too. But this is the one, man, this is the one that stood out to me the most. This is about a guy who's really struggling. He's played by Anders Nielsen Lie again. And this guy appears in all of George M's movies. And again, he just plays this character with such subtlety. He did the same thing in Reprise as well. But he's really good at playing characters that are, you know, dealing with a lot of emotion just internally. Like, he's really good internally. And there's no exception here in Oslo, August 31st. And man, this movie really, it really, really got to me, because just want to go on a bit of a personal tangent for a second, that, you know, a lot of people are asking, and I've been contemplating as well. I've been saying there's going to be an After Sun podcast coming out, and you know, it's been coming out for a while, and yeah, it's going to come out soon, blah, 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 blah. And the truth is, I tried to record the After Sun podcast, but I just couldn't finish it. I couldn't get to it, because it involves subject matter that is very, very close to me, and I just couldn't get through recording that. I put together the information, but I couldn't get through recording it and speaking about it. And this film as well has the same kind of subject matter. But so it's going to, might be a little hard to talk about, but I'm going to try. So don't get me wrong. I really want to release that After Some podcast, but I've just got to somehow get over what this thing is at the moment, but it might take some time to do. So at the moment that After Some podcast is on the burner. Don't get me wrong. I really want to talk about that film. I love that movie. But it's kind of put on the back burner for now because of personal reasons. And yeah, a lot of that subject matter that I was trying to talk about in that podcast comes up here. Just to be transparent with you guys, I lost a friend last year. He took his own life. And not only was this person my friend, he was one of my best friends. You know, I had known this person for, man, almost 11, 12 years. And yeah, it was a very shocking thing that happened, and very sad, very tragic. And it really put me in a pit. I had a very tough start to the year, mentally. And I've been, you know, going to therapy for that since, and trying to, you know, find ways around it, but really there is no way around it. And I've been trying to understand, one of the things that I've been trying to understand is what was going through this person's mind. You know, what were they actually thinking? Why were they like this? But that's just something that I haven't really, even after seeing this film, that I really haven't understood yet. And I, you know, might not ever will. But Anders' character in this film, the feelings that he's feeling, and the, you know, everything feels so heavy. And I didn't, I wouldn't say I fully understood it, but I kind of understood some of what my friend was going through when you just have these central main feelings, you know? And that led me to have a very profound experience, very low experience, but a very profound experience right before I saw this film, because things got very bad towards the end of August for myself, and I started to be in that frame of mind, and you know, just kind of, I guess, being vague about it, but yeah, being in that state of mind. And then I saw this film at the end of the month, and I don't know, it was just very, things clicked into place, I guess. I had a little bit of an understanding, and it was a very, I just had a very profound experience with myself, and then at the end of the month with this movie, and this movie really added on to that experience and that state of mind. And it just really hit me. It really hit me, this film. And it's one of my favorites, I think, that I've seen. It's definitely my favorite of that Oslo trilogy. And if, you know, it's a sad one, guys. I'm not going to lie. It's a sad one. It's probably the heaviest film on this list and the saddest film on this list, but it is one of the best films on this list, in my opinion. I think probably the best film here. And if you can have an experience like I did, then that's great. That's great. That's what I want you to have. I don't want you to go through, obviously I don't want you to go through those feelings, but I want you to have that experience that I had. I want you to have that connection that I had with this film. And I'll just leave you with this before moving on to the next one, because I'm getting a bit choked up. There's a great scene in this film when the main character is sitting in a cafe, and Giorgione does this thing with this sound design that I found just absolutely fascinating. The character is inside the cafe, and he's hearing all these conversations around him, and I connected with this a lot because I listen to people's conversations. You know, I don't go around like fucking with a, you know, with a sound recorder or like, you know, anything like that. But people listen. People watch. It's how I get some ideas for my screenplays as well and stories. You know, if a writer is saying that they don't do that, then they're lying, because a lot of them just kind of hang around and they listen to people and they people watch. I can't speak for all of them, but I know that even some that I know, they admit to that and say that they do that. But yeah, this character is listening to the people around him, listening to conversations. Some of them are just little small anecdotes. This other person just goes on to saying how much they want to do with the world and how excited they are to do all these things. And he has a smile on his face, but there's this hint of melancholy to it, because it's not a smile. It's just this, like, you could see it from two different ways. You could see it as like, maybe he can experience that. Maybe he can, you know, make that happen. Or he's having this smile of like, well, I'm never going to experience that, but I'm glad that person has that. Or it's lovely to hear that, but, you know, it doesn't help the situation. Like, there's so many, I loved his acting in this scene, but again, it's the sound design, because he hears all these conversations in this cafe and it's all very loud. And it's all like, you know, you really are in the mindset of this main character here. And then once he's done hearing the conversations, there's this amazing thing that just blew me away. I don't know. It's such a small, simple, subtle thing, but says a lot about the film and about the character's state of mind. It's when he exits the cafe the film goes silent, and it's not as loud as it is in as it was in the cafe, and it's the city. So you're thinking like, you know, it's Oslo. So you're thinking like cars going past, people talking, but you literally only hear the door open and a few like little mini sounds, maybe some distant car noises or traffic or anything like that. It's so much more quiet than it was in the cafe. Because I don't think in that moment, I'm thinking like the character is not really, you know, everything's so dull and boring again. And I don't know, there's many ways to interpret that scene, but that is my favorite scene of any movie I've ever seen. And I want to fucking study it. I want to read more about it. And if that is not a rough recommendation to see this film, not just because of what I've been talking about with this one, but just with that scene alone, and you can hear what I'm feeling about it, how passionate I am about it. That's it, guys. That's your recommendation to check out Oslo, August 31st. I was a cheeky bastard. I watched it on August 31st. Just a funny joke for me. Don't think it was funny for anyone else. But, you know, just for me, you know. Next up, we've got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. There's not much to say about this one, except that I really enjoyed the animation. I loved how the turtles all felt like teenagers, all felt like kids. They really felt like they were still learning and training. And I always love hearing and seeing Ayo Edebiri in things. I love how she's blowing up from being in, I first saw her in The Bear, but now I'm just seeing her in fucking everything now. And the animation's really cool. It makes it like, it's got that Spider-Verse vibe, but it's not, you know, it's not directly pulled from that. You know, it wouldn't exist, I think, without Spider-Verse, but it's not directly pulled from that. It actually looks like, what it looks like is like these kind of, when you see in video games, when you see the kind of, I think it's the actual concept art and stuff like that. And then when you read graphic novels as well, you start seeing the concept art as that as well, and how rough that is. And it really like gave off that kind of that feeling. It gave off that the colors and how everything stands out. How everything's kind of like got scratches all over it. It looks really rough looking, and it's like a gross movie as well. But yeah, not much to say about it. I had a lot of fun of it. I definitely watched it again, and looking forward to that sequel because you know that's fucking coming. Then I watched Asteroid City, which is Wes Anderson's new one. If you guys listen to the podcast or have seen my videos, you know I like The Boy. I like Wes Anderson. I liked The French Dispatch. I didn't love it. My favorite film, I think, from him is The Grand Budapest Hotel. Royal Tenenbaums II. And I was excited for this movie, especially from the cast as well. But then seeing all the reactions coming out of Cannes, how people felt about it, where it sits in his filmography. And yeah, I really liked Asteroid City. It's weird because I don't think it's going to be in the top 10, but I'd love to watch it again. And like whenever I think about it, I'm just like, yeah, that movie's fucking great. It was a really good movie. I went as Augie Steinbeck to an Halloween party this year as well. And again, talking about him, Jason Schwartzman was great as the main character, Augie Steinbeck. I thought all of the performances were good. Jeffrey Wright, Steve Carell, who else was in it? Leif Schreiber, Edward Norton, Margot Robbie, Scarlett Johansson was good too. And I liked what it felt like was, it felt like Wes Anderson kind of taking the piss out of himself, almost. Like, it's a play. It's a movie within a play within a movie. And it's very meta. It's a very meta film. A lot of meta jokes. Especially when it comes to, like, Adrian Brody's character. When he shows up. And, yeah, there's a lot to say about, you know, existence, our life on Earth, meaning, you know, the meaning of life. But also a lot to say about, you know, Wes Anderson and his works as well. I won't get too heavy into it, but yeah, it's a really, really solid movie. I love the soundtrack. I love the Wes Anderson-ness of it all. I don't think this is his most Wes Anderson. I still think The French Dispatch was the most Wes Anderson this man has ever Wes Andersons. My God. But, you know, this is, I just like him kind of like reflecting on his work and seeing him at a point in his career at the moment where he can actually make something like this and comment on his career like this, which I feel like he is doing. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. Asteroid City. It was in my top 10, I think, of most anticipated. It was in my top 10 most anticipated. It might not be in my top 10, but it might get an honorable mention. So yeah, recommendation still for Asteroid City. That's why it's on this list. Seven, I've got a little film, a little horror film, written and directed by Samuel Bowden called Cobweb. It stars Anthony Starr, Lizzie Kaplan, and Woody Norman, who we last saw in Come On, Come On, Mike Mills' film with Joaquin Phoenix. And he's playing a scared little boy in this movie, a scared little boy, a very scared little boy. And he starts thinking that there's something in the walls. And what this movie does as well is you start looking at the parents as well, because they're acting really strange, they're acting really weird. You think there's like a hidden secret that they have. You think they're, sometimes you just think they're killing people straight up. So this movie does a great job at keeping you on edge about things, kind of shifting your trust with people as well. Just like, do I trust them, or is the kid actually going crazy, or is there something in the walls? Like, I enjoyed all of that. I enjoy that aspect of it all. Performances are all good too. Anthony Starr is always going to be a menacing dude. I know he can play other characters, but he can play that creepy person so good. I mean, we know him as Homelander from The Boys, but he can play that creepy character so well. But Lizzie Kaplan was the one that stood out to me in terms of like being that really unsettled but creepy but like overbearing mother. Like, She was really good in this movie. I've never seen Lizzie Kaplan like this before. And I thought she was great. I loved how this film was shot. There's some really great lighting. And there's a really great shot where it's almost like you're looking into like a children's storybook. Like, there's this really great shot where the Woody Norman's character, I forget all their names, but he is sitting on a staircase. And they're at a point in the movie where the parents are starting to be like, is our son going crazy? Or, you know, is what to do with our son? And it's just their silhouettes. And their silhouettes are, they're chatting and they're talking. But the way they're framed, they're like, first of all, they're like really menacing and they're like really tall. And they look really big over, you know, small Woody Norman. But it's the way they're framed and the way they look in the shot, it really makes you think of like a storybook, because the movie is kind of, it feels like a storybook at times. The score makes it feel like a storybook. It is this creepy tale as well. No spoilers, but it's this creepy tale. It has this like childlike perspective to it, because you're in the perspective of Woody Norman and what he's going through. And that shot just captured it all, really. It was like the microcosm of the whole movie, that shot. These parents that are overbearing, but also feel huge to him. And also, speaking of like really good shots as well, not to get too off track, but there's a really great shot as well when they're sitting at the dinner table. And just the way, the production design of the house too. The house was really big. And I think it's the lens they must have used as well when you're looking at perspective from Woody Norman's character. And it makes it feel really big. The table looks really big. The kitchen looks really big. There's a great shot at the dinner table where you just feel like you're sitting at the biggest fucking table in the world. But I think it's supposed to make you feel like, you know, you're in his POV. And yeah, it was creepy. There's some good scares in it too. I really liked the scare. There's a certain scare where you hear some sound effect and you don't get that scare, but then it comes later. It's kind of a bit of a Conjuring James Wan thing. But I thought that was really effective. I thought it was a pretty effective horror movie. I'm sad that it was underseen, and I want to see what Summer Burden does next. I think this was his first movie. I don't know if he did anything before this, but I'll be watching anything else Samuel Burden does, because the way he approached this film, I thought was very effective and very unique, and looking forward to his next one. Now, number 8, I've got Shortcomings, which is the directorial debut from Randall Park. You guys might know him from Fresh Off the Boat. You might know him as King Jong-un from fucking The Interview, which is where I first saw him. But yeah, he had Fresh on the Boat, and then he's in the Marvel Universe as that agent. You know, he's not really that great in the MCU, in my opinion, but I do like Randall Park. I'm a fan of his. I like his delivery and his movies. I like his delivery and, you know, whenever he's in things. And this is his directorial debut. It's called Shortcomings, and it's about this guy named Ben, played by Justin H. Min. And he's a film bro. We can just say it. He's a film bro. And, you know, he is probably the most unlikable protagonist of 2023. And, yeah, you can go into that saying like, oh shit, is this person going to be so insufferable and annoying? And don't get me wrong, he is. But that is why I liked this movie. That is why I thought it was an interesting choice that Randall Park made to make us focus on this character who is so fucking unlikable, makes the worst decisions, and just is, yeah, just insufferable to watch. Bad to his friends, bad to his girlfriend, who's really cute and loves him, but he doesn't love her. Sherry Cole is in this, who we saw in Joyride from the earlier this year, and she's really good. But yeah, I thought it was a daring approach to just really like shape this movie around this dude. And that's what I like about it as well, is there's no arc to this character either. He's just shitty the entire fucking movie. He's just so fucking, such an insufferable fucking asshole the entire movie. And this person, like, this is the kind of person we're dealing with, right? He will not have sex with his girlfriend because he's watching, like, I think he's watching the special features of the 400 Blows, I'm pretty sure. That's what some eagle-eye viewer spotted that, and they're like, oh, he's watching the 400 Blows, or he's watching this, I thought it was the 400 Blows, but then someone said it was like this other obscure Asian film. I'm not too sure what it was, but he was just watching, he'd be watching that. You know, he's got a DVD on his lap and everything, and he'd rather be doing that than getting down to it with his girlfriend. And look, I can't talk because, I had an opportunity to, you know, get with someone on the weekend, but or maybe not, but like, you know, work your way there. But I decided to talk about movies instead with all my mates. So that's where I am at. And so I think that's where I've read this character and kind of was like, oh fuck, but me? That's me though? Not as insufferable, don't get me wrong, and I think my friends will speak for that as well. Not as insufferable, but like, me though. Like, shit. Fuck. Personally attacked with this character. Yeah, he's just this guy. He's starting to lose his relationship. He tries to figure things out. And he just does. He just tries to figure things out. He might not be the best at doing it, but I just liked the movie. I didn't hate him. He's a human being, you know? He could be better. He really could be. And he does admit that in the film. But I don't know. I really liked Shortcomings. And I think if you want something different, where you don't really get a protagonist that you'll latch onto, that you'll like, that you'll be like, yeah, they'll have an arc. Nope. Shortcomings is not that film. So if you want something different, check out Shortcomings. At number 9, we've got my favorite comedy of the entire year. And that would be Bottoms. And I was looking forward to this movie ever since it premiered at South by Southwest. I think it's 2022. Or did it play this year? I'm not too sure. Point is, it was premiering at South by Southwest. But this is written and directed by Emma Seligman. It's also written by Rachel Sennett, too. And this is the pair that we got from Shiver Baby, which I fucking love that movie. And if you want to have a absolutely anxious nightmare, chuck that on. Do a double feature with that with Bo's Afraid and see how you go. But love Shiver Baby. And when I heard that Emma Seligman was tackling a high school comedy, I was very intrigued about a all-girls fight club. And our two leads are Rachel Sennett and Ayo Adebiri. And they're trying to... It's that tropey cliche thing of like they're trying to sleep with their crushes, but they're going the worst way about it pretty much. And, you know, I was expecting Bottoms to be funny. I laughed at the trailer. I didn't think it was... I looked at it and was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be different. Okay. But I thought it was going to be different in a way of like, I was going to do some jokes I didn't expect. But then when I finished this film, I was like, what the fuck? But in like a really good way, like the best way possible. This was not what I was expecting. Like a little bit what I was expecting, but also mainly not what I was expecting. This is so much sillier and so much more of a satire than I thought it was going to be. And just the fucking... Dude, the direction this film takes... especially when going in from the second to the third act, I was not expecting that at all. And then the final act, what? Huh? You kind of get a sense that you're in a heightened reality when you're earlier on in the film and there's certain things going on. You're like, that wouldn't happen at a school. So you're kind of just thinking like, yeah, okay. And like the way the teachers talk to the students as well, the principal literally calls them gays, untalented gays. And then they like start swearing at them, and you're like, okay, this movie's going to be silly. There's a heightened reality to this. This is not taking place in our world, and that's what I liked about it. That's how silly this got, how much fun it was having. What I loved about it as well is the costume design as well. I don't even know where this movie takes place because there's so many needle drops from the early 2000s. There's one that just, oh my god, hit the spot. God damn, I didn't ever thought I'd hearing that in the movie, but we did, we got it. Thank you, Emma Seligman and Rachel Sennett for that. And your music supervisor for that, putting that one in there because, oh boy, did that hit. That was good. But yeah, whole cast is good in this as well. And we get bloopers at the end. I haven't seen bloopers in fucking ages and it was so good to see all that again. And yeah, like you have fun with the movie, but then you have more fun. Even more fun with the bloopers at the end as well. So yeah, probably the best comedy of the year. I think I was going for Joyride, and then I really liked No Hard Feelings, but this movie has like everything I like. Like it has the high school comedy aspect. It has like the great character chemistry. It has the great lines, quotable shit. It has the crazy moments, but then it has this like heightened sense of reality where this just would not happen in today's like world. This wouldn't be, and it has this like heightened sense of reality, this satirical approach that really, really works for me. And if you're looking for something like that and a little different, bit of a different flavor with your high school comedy, check out Emma Seligman and Rachel Sennett's approach to one with Bottoms. And then finally, topping off our list, something a little strange, something a little different, but I had a lot of fun with. I finally got around to watching Sick of Myself, which is a Norwegian film directed by Christopher Bowley. And if you've seen this name before, it's because he has made a film for this year with Nicolas Cage for A24 named Dream Scenario. So you might have seen that floating around the festivals or, you know, seen that name pop up. And, He's getting big now. He is getting big. But before that, He had this film, Sick of Myself, which came out, I think it came out last year. People saw this in festivals. They came out of it thinking like, okay, this is like really disturbing. This is actually the worst person in the world. Like, I think that's how I could best describe it, is this person is the worst person in the world. And it's funny because, you know, they're both Norwegian films. Yeah, this person is the worst person in the world. I want to get her name. What's her fucking name? Signe is much better than Julie. Is much, much, much worse than Julie. And look, don't get me wrong, her fucking boyfriend Thomas as well sucks as well. But what is Sick of Myself about? What's it about? It's about this woman named Signe, and she wants to do anything for attention. She's a classic narcissist. She wants to do anything for attention. And it sucks as well that she, it doesn't help as well that she's with a boyfriend that wants constant attention. He's a little bit of a man baby, and, he wants to be, you know, the next best thing. And, but she gets jealous of that and wants all the attention to herself. So she does these things throughout the movie that, you know, you kind of like understand because he's getting all the attention, and then you're just thinking, oh yeah, I could kind of see that. But then she takes it a step further and you're like, oh fuck no, I would not do that. That's insane. That's actually insane. So what ends up happening is she wants so much attention that she overdoses on these drugs that completely configure her physical appearance. And because of this happening though, it creates this new notoriety that she tries to get accustomed to. And that is the film. And do you think she's going to take that in the right direction? Do you think she's going to learn the right lesson from that? Well, if you did, you thought wrong. You thought wrong, because she fucking doesn't. she does not. I thoroughly enjoyed this film. I thought it was really, really funny. People might look at this as well and be like, this is, what is wrong with you? But I found this really, really funny. The performance from, Christine Kujar-Thorpe, I thought was, really, really good. One of my favorites of the year. She absolutely killed it as this character. You know, like I said, I was initially behind her and understood why she wanted so much attention, but then the degree that she gets to, that she, the degree that she goes to get that attention, no, I'm just not on board with. I want to highlight as well, Benjamin Loeb's cinematography, like really beautiful and solid framing, great composition. And I liked all of the, single shots. He does this thing where, Signe is captured in these like kind of really isolating singles in Oslo with this really, again, bustling city where there's a lot going on, but it feels like she is like small in that world, which again makes us feel like we're in her perspective and the way she's feeling. And look, like I said before, I don't think, you know, I want that attention, but sometimes you do feel like that. Sometimes you feel like, you know, a supporting character in your own life. And she, you know, those shots really, really, you know, articulate that quite well. And I love the way he and Christopher, you know, approach the framing of Signe sometimes. And yeah, that's all I want to say about this one. You need to go on this one blind, because there is some interesting things that happen to this character. And there's some wild things that happen to this character. And the lengths that she goes to get the attention will baffle you. And you'll be like, what are you doing? But also, I need to keep watching. And I cannot take my eyes off the screen. So yeah, that is Sick of Myself, and that is the end of my recommendations, my big list for all the movies I've seen lately that I really, really like and that I think you should see. Let's round it out again. I've got Talk to Me, I've got Showing Up, They Climb Tyrone, Oslo, August 31st, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, Asteroid City, Cobweb, Shortcomings, Bottoms, and Sick of Myself. I saw that in the last few months, and I believe all of them are out. Talk to Me is out on Blu-ray. Showing Up is also out on digital. They Clone Tyrone's on Netflix. Oslo, August 31st, I watched on Mubi. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was in theaters. Asteroid City was in theaters. Cobweb was on digital. Shortcomings was on digital. Bottoms was on digital and is going to Australian theaters soon, at the end of November, right after my birthday. So I do actually want to see this in the theater as well. And then Sick of Myself, I had to catch on digital as well because we did not get a release of this in Australia. I think we got one showing in Sydney, but I couldn't make that, so I had to watch it on digital as well. And yeah, that's it, guys. Thanks for tuning in and listening. And hopefully you've jotted those movies down, you've taken attention of those, and you can spice up your watching at the moment, not just catching all the big blockbusters that are coming out. Hopefully your lists are going to look a lot more different at the end of the year when you catch some of these movies off this list. Just before we go, I just want to say thanks for people that are watching the Taylor Swift video. I didn't expect that at all. That's got the most views on the channel now. I think there might be just other people that just see Taylor Swift and they've clicked on the video. But other than that, a view is a view. I'll take it. Thanks so much for doing that and watching that. I had a great time with that film. Sorry I did not stream Resident Evil 2 a lot this month. Again, life got in the way a lot. A big particular thing happened earlier in the month. And I just didn't have time. I really just did not have time to do it. We've played it a few times, but I don't know what's going to happen with streaming. I'll see if I can get back into it, but work, there's a lot of work going on at the moment. There's a lot more. I'm pretty busy. I'm much more busy with work now that I have three jobs. But I will try to keep up the podcast again. I love doing the podcast and bringing back the videos for the monthly watches. And the next one's going to be October. We're going to be talking about some horror films that I watched, and we'll make a whole segment towards them. And there's going to be, talking about normal movies as well. But that video will be mostly focusing on horror, so I can't wait to talk about what I watched horror-wise in October. Guys, that's going to do it. I'm out of here. You can look forward to that video soon. Go watch the Taylor Swift video. I'll let you know I'm going on Twitch. But other than that, yeah, go on Instagram, Cole Cruz, the public one, not the private one. Check out my Letterboxd as well. I log and write about all the movies that I see, just about all of them. Subscribe to YouTube, subscribe to the podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you guys soon.